Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas, practical strategies. I tell stories about things that worked, but also those big epic fails that I have made along the way. I interview experts who share their insights, and all because I believe to my core that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And today in particular, I want to talk about what it means to empower students with voice and choice, not just in terms of choosing the topics, but in terms of owning the classroom culture. So I'm going to be sharing three different ways that we can empower students to own the classroom culture. But before we do that, I just want to say to everybody, thank you so much for those of you who have bought the book that I co-wrote with Trevor Muir, New Teacher Mindset. If you are a new teacher, I want to share that there is a really cool resource that we've put together. It is called the New Teacher Academy, and what you get every single month is a set of resources as well as a self-paced course, which means you can do this on your time when you feel like doing it. And it's basically, we're gonna be handling a lot of these really practical ideas that we talk about in our book, but we're gonna be walking you through those things step by step to save you time, save you stress, and allow you to be different from day one. So check it out. It's you can find all that information on thenewteachermindset.com. And go sign up for it. Without further ado, let's dive into this topic of the three ways that we can empower students to own the classroom culture. When AJ Giuliani and I co-wrote the book Empower, we focused on the ways that students could own the learning process. It's the core idea of shifting from a more teacher-centered approach to something that's a little bit more student-centered. We often talk about what it means to move from compliance to engagement, but this is the idea of moving it one step further toward empowerment. And so you can imagine it as this continuum from compliance, which is teacher-centered, to engagement, which is still teacher-centered, but it's saying, what do you want to do as a student, to empowerment, where we're really focused on this idea of building in voice and choice. Note that each approach is necessary. We actually don't want to overwhelm students with too much choice, too much empowerment at the very beginning. It just becomes overwhelming. In fact, our next podcast that we're going to have is all about this idea of taking a gradual release of responsibility approach to student voice and choice. So we'll be getting into that in a future podcast episode. But again, all three of these are necessary. In reading, I might take a compliance-driven approach when introducing phonics and blending and really sticking to the science of reading. As we do a whole class read aloud or small lit circles and in groups, we're shifting toward engagement. You're doing this because you want to. And then when we do silent reading, reading projects, things like that, then we're shifting to a more choice-driven, student-centered approach. And yet, I think it goes beyond just choosing the topics. When we wrote the book Empower, we focused on the pedagogical aspects of student ownership, things like student choice in topics and selecting strategies and self-selecting scaffolds and self-assessment. And those are all fantastic. I do not regret doing that. My one regret, though, is that we didn't focus on this idea of owning the classroom community. So let's talk about what that means. As educators, we can build a sense of ownership by empowering students to help design the classroom systems and structures. They can take ownership of the classroom climate and culture, and I want to share a couple of ways that we can do this. Number one, we can empower students to choose the class norms. What this looks like is we basically are saying, what do you believe in? Where do you want to start? What's important to you? And so you might ask questions that are a little more open-ended, have students individually jot down their answers to these questions. And the questions might be things like, what does respectful communication look like to you? Or what does it mean to respect the physical equipment and materials? What does it look like to be prepared for class? How do you want to be treated by the people around you? What kind of freedom do you want to enjoy? How can we show respect to one another? And as you begin going through these questions, you start to come up with your norms. Some of them might be norms for collaboration, personal work ethic norms, academic integrity norms. And in the process, you want to make sure that your norms follow a few different core ideas. And here's what it looks like. Positive phrasing. You should be focused on what students should do rather than always stating just what they should not do. There's a time and a place to say do not blank, like do not run in the science lab. I get it. But as a guiding principle, you want students to focus on the positive. So in that case, actually saying walk from place to place in the lab. Instead of saying don't touch other people, keep your hands to yourself. That's the idea. Being clear and concise, students should know immediately what to do. We don't need long explanations in our norms. Concrete and visual. Make it clear in a way that students should be able to visualize what it looks like to follow the norms. And then be polite. Be sure to use the word please. So please keep your hands to yourselves. It can also help as you move into small group interactions. And what's happening here is that students are coming up with their own norms that they're going to follow within a small group that still fit with the larger classroom norms. So here's an example actually from eighth grade students that I taught. And I love that these are generally positive, clear, concise, concrete, visual. They fit into this category. The second one's a little vague. You'll listen to it and you might be like, oh, there could be some wordsmithing here, but it's pretty good. So number one, they said, you know, please keep the language respectful. Notice, please. Avoid insults or put downs. So they're saying don't do that, but again, they're still using positive phrasing. Be clear and truthful. Listen intently. This means waiting for other people to finish speaking before you speak up. It also means listening with the goal of understanding the other person's view rather than listening to prove them wrong. I love that norm. Trust the other person's intentions. Give the other partner the benefit of the doubt. Be willing to take responsibility for your actions. Love those group norms. Again, you wouldn't expect something that well developed from second graders. You might have something a little bit better from seniors in high school. These are eighth graders. So the idea is from the beginning, you're building buy-in by saying, what are our class norms? Number two, empower students to define the collective values. So every culture has a shared set of values that unify the group and create a sense of cohesion. Often these values go unnoticed and undetected. They function almost like white noise buzzing in the background, but they are still very powerful. Shared values exist in a tight-knit, smaller community as well, but they're true of large nations and cultures. So you see it at the macro and the micro level. They exist within the classroom, and I think that's what's important is we say, what do we value together as a community? Because we're gonna spend a lot of time together this year. As educators, we can help students make and develop the values together and make those values visible by creating this shared set of values. And it's not necessarily that you're creating the values. I mean, maybe you are, but you're also just tapping into the shared overlap of values that we already have when we walk into the room. A classroom is still one of the few remaining locations where populations remain truly diverse. In an era of echo chambers and filter bubbles, I love that the classroom space is one of the few places where it's formed by geography and not just interests where we all have something in common. It's a space where you get broader ideologies and worldviews, and I think that's really beautiful, but that also creates a challenge. You're gonna have conflict, you're gonna have clashes within your community. And each community will be at its best moments, this beautiful mosaic of diversity, ranging from socioeconomic backgrounds to cultural identity to family structure, religious affiliations, ideological backgrounds, linguistic experiences. And we want to embrace this diversity, but we also want to talk about what do we share in common? What are our shared values? So here's a process that I use. Part one, start with a personal reflection. And you can ask questions like, what do you care about most in life? Think about a person you want to be. What are some of the things that you can do to become that person? What are four qualities you value in a friend? What is a life rule that you wish everyone followed? And in this moment, you're just getting them to think about, what do I value? In an early elementary class, you might start by reading a picture book together to set the tone, or you might have them draw a picture of the kind of person that they want to be. Then part two is they discuss with a partner. And I want to point out, part one allows introverts the processing time we need. Often in schools, we have a lot of like team builder activities and it's very extrovert centered. What I love about this is we're saying, hey, there's a time and a place for that extrovert time, but I'm gonna give you the space to process things individually. Part two, they discuss with a partner. In this phase, you might set a sentence frame to guide the conversation. You might ask questions like, how are your partner's ideas similar or different from yours? You might say, what do you find in common between you and your partner? Then in part three, you do silent writing. And what you can do in this moment is you set up these locations around the classroom where students have a marker. I love having half the class have a marker, half the other class doesn't have a marker. And in the whiteboard, you have, you know, sentence stems like, in our class, we value blank, or we should all agree to blank, or what kind of classroom space do you want to share? And students just jot down their ideas without saying a word. And what you can do is half the class has markers, and then when you write something, you have to go find someone who doesn't have a marker and silently hand it to them. And so what happens is, a lot of the introverts, again, will begin to write their ideas. Some of the shy students that might be afraid to speak up will share ideas. You might have kids who draw out some pictures and symbols. Some of the students who need a little extra processing time for linguistic reasons, they might be multilingual students, they have an opportunity. And there's something powerful about this shared experience that's very, it honors the individual, but it's saying together as a class, what are some themes that emerge? And in this moment, the class is absolutely silent. Part four, you then debrief this. And as students debrief, you ask questions like, what is it like for you? How do you feel? What were some areas that the class might disagree on? What are some trends that you notice that we all agree on? And then in part four, we identify the values. Together as a class, you create a set of shared values. And then what you can do is you can take these values into action. So you say, we value blank, and then actions that demonstrate these values, right? We value listening to other people's opinions, actions that demonstrate this, waiting to speak up until someone else is done talking would be an action that demonstrates this value, right? So that's idea number three. The third way that we can empower students to own the classroom culture from day one is to help them choose the class procedures or rituals. Now, I personally love the term ritual here because I think rituals grow more powerful the more we do them, and I think the same thing happens in a classroom. Rituals are simply a set of procedures that everyone does on a regular basis. Often these procedures or rituals can seem invisible. You know, we don't notice that they're happening, but that doesn't make them any less powerful. We have rituals in our families, whether we notice it or talk about it or not. We have rituals in our communities. If you're part of a faith community, rituals are very powerful in those spaces. You have rituals among your groups of friends. I always think, like, you know, people bag on the notion of assigned seating in the classroom. Well, almost every family I've visited, almost every space where there are communities, people have assigned seats. They just don't assign it out loud. Like, you know, in most families, people sit at a specific location at the table every single day, and it becomes their spot or their spot on the couch. And so we see this all the time, that there's this notion of the rituals that we have. And when we don't know the rituals, it creates confusion. I remember years ago, well, actually over 20 years ago, when my wife and I first got married, I had never been to a fancy restaurant. And so we're on our honeymoon. We go to this really fancy restaurant, and I don't know what to do. I don't know what forks to use, what spoons to use, what order it goes in. I don't understand the notion of palate cleansers. None of that makes sense to me, and I am lost because I don't know the procedures. And thankfully, my wife had been to a couple of fancy restaurants in her life, like maybe two. And she said, all right, John, here's how it works. Do this, do this. And she was my guide along the way. And my anxiety went down. And I think the same thing is true of students. They need to know the procedures. It's not uncommon for teachers to practice procedures in the first week of school. I'm a huge fan of that. But also what we can do is we can help students define what the procedures are. And so one of my favorite activities to do is something called the procedure grid or the ritual grid. So here's how it works. Step number one, students start with sticky notes where they write down any questions that they have about the class. Am I allowed to do this? Am I allowed to do that? When can I do this? When can I do that? You know, am I allowed to go to the restroom right now? Can I sharpen my pencil? Can I throw something away? Where do I turn papers in? How do I get materials? In step two, as a whole class, we go through the sticky notes and we look at the questions that are similar. You can do this by having students read and add questions together in a crowd. You can, again, use chart paper for it. I love putting this all on, you know, a large Google document and projecting that on the screen. That's my kind of MO. And then you take the most common questions and you pop them into this procedure grid. And if you can imagine this, you have question. So who can I talk to? Can I throw something away? Can I sharpen my pencil? All those questions. And then what you do is you have individual, partner, small group, and whole class. And together as a class, you negotiate. So who can I talk to individually? You know what? If you're doing individual work, raise your hand and you can answer a question. Or you can also talk to the person directly next to you. You know, during individual work, I don't mind if you talk to your partner. Just keep your volume at a lower level. Partner work, you can talk to your partner only. And then if you have a question, you can go to the teacher. So partner first, teacher second. Small group, you can talk to your small group only. And then if you have a question, go to your teacher. It's important that groups cooperate together, that they collaborate. Whole class, raise your hand if you want to talk, one person at a time. And so what we do is we go through each of these ideas and we not only say this is what the procedure or the ritual is, but we give a rationale why. And so the rules become a lot less arbitrary, or I should say the procedures become a lot less arbitrary. And then when students violate these procedures or these rituals, you don't treat it like they violated a norm, which might require a consequence. What you do is you just give correction and you practice the procedures until we have these down. Now, after you've done this, you might put this into an anchor chart. You might put this on your learning management system. But what you've done is you've set up your class rituals or procedures. For other things like where do I turn stuff in, where do I find things, I highly recommend doing something like an escape room or a scavenger hunt that allows students to move around the classroom and figure out where things are located. So again, that's the notion of this procedure or ritual grid. So going back to it, I highly recommend that from the first week of school forward, ask yourself, what can students own in my classroom space? And how can I empower them in that student ownership? And from there, you can design some moments of student empowerment that's also built into structure so that it's not a total chaotic free-for-all, but it is a message that says your voice matters in this class. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcast or Spotify? That's where I typically listen to podcasts, or Amazon Podcasts, wherever it is that you are listening to podcasts. Would you leave a review on it? And would you subscribe to it? That's one of the best ways for you to find this podcast on a regular basis. And maybe even tell a friend about it. Word of mouth is still one of the best ways to get this podcast out here. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.